You know, I was going to be precious about this, and I was not going to do an interview until I finally saw them do a Three's Company-styled episode or an Alf-styled episode. But darn it, there's so much to discuss in the first three episodes, I couldn't say no. Howdy, I'm Jeff Goldsmith, and this is the Q&A. My agenda is simple. Each week, I plan to bring you in-depth insights into the creative process of storytelling. Folks, you know what? Don't worry. It's okay that I didn't hold off for the Alf episode, because we have got a great interview with WandaVision head writer Jack Schaefer. And Jack was very forthcoming about what she could be forthcoming about. So what we did do is talk about a few of the specific things that I knew that she would be able to give us answers to in the first three episodes. That's what we covered in this interview. And I'm hoping that we were able to talk to Jack again later in the season or at the end of the season. But what we're able to do was get an insight into Jack's writing process, you know, working and running her first writer's room, which she did on WandaVision. And Jack was very generous with her time, and she was really forthcoming about her answers. And there was so much fun to talk about, because I absolutely love WandaVision. So I know you'll dig this episode. And speaking of things to dig, I hope you check out Backstory Magazine over at backstory.net. You know, we're a film magazine. You could read us on a desktop or laptop, or of course, through our iPad app entitled Backstory. Go figure. We just recently published issue 42. There's so much great stuff in it. So many fun interviews. We published screenplays in their entirety, along with screenwriter interviews. We also interviewed directors, comic book writers. There's a lot going on in Backstory issue 42, and you could check out our table of contents over at backstory.net. And you know what? If you want to test drive us because you've never read us before, please stop on over to backstory.net or the Backstory app and read the free issue. We put up an entire free issue there. And if you are a Marvel fan, you will really enjoy the free issue, because it happens to be issue 37, which was our Avengers Endgame issue. We had in-depth chats with Marcus and McFeely, the co-screenwriters, of course, the Russo brothers, the directors. We did so much in that issue, and it was a really a blast. So as a Marvel fan, if you haven't read our free issue, please go read it, because I know you'll enjoy it. And look, if you decide you want to become a subscriber to Backstory, we are happy to have you. So here's a discount coupon code. Just enter the words save five. That's save in the number five at backstory.net. And that will save you $5 off a subscription for a year. And it'll give you access to anything new we publish and anything old we published that's in our archive. But look, I know you'll dig Backstory Magazine, and we would love your support during the pandemic. So thanks for considering becoming a subscriber. But now, without any further ado, let's jump right into our chat with head writer of WandaVision, Jack Schaefer.
Hi, it's so nice to meet you. And I'm delighted that you brought me to the set of Fire Walk With Me.
Yes, indeed. You know, because of quarantine, we're all kind of trapped in this Black Lodge kind of situation.
Oh my gosh, ain't it the truth? This is my life. It's just in a gray box.
A little box. Well, okay, look, we have a lot of ground to cover. So here's, you know, it's always good to start with breaking in stories and just get a baseline for you. Did you study writing and filmmaking in college? Or if not, what'd you study?
I went to film school, a graduate school at USC. And I was on the director track. I wanted to be a director starting very young, super young. That's all I wanted to do. And I ended up writing so that I would have something to direct. I was an English major, so I think I was always a writer, but just I knew I wasn't going to write novels. I don't have that big of a brain. But I wanted to make movies. So I went to film school and took writing classes. It didn't ever feel like it came easily for me. And my first stuff out of the gate was directing, but it was harder to get directing like gigs underway. So I ended up writing more and being known as a writer, and that ended up being my path until, and now I'm doing TV, I was always in features, and TV's rad.
That's awesome. Well, so, okay. The first produced credit that I know of that you had was Mr. Stash, which won a 2010 movie pitch contest presented by American Express. And then it ended up in the 2011 Tribeca Film Festival in the short film category. And you then wound up sharing a writing credit on The Hustle with other writers. Going from shorts to features, and obviously in the middle of all that, you had Olaf's Frozen Adventure, which got you into the the Disney sphere. Had you been writing just a lot of specs during this time? And that was kind of your progression, and The Hustle was the first time you were produced next to Olaf's Frozen Adventure?
I made a feature first before even that short.
Which one?
Yeah, it's called Timer.
Timer, okay.
And I wrote it and produced it and directed it. It was just a tiny indie thing, and it went to the Tribeca Film Festival, which is how I got that Mr. Sash thing. That was sort of more of an advertisement for the Tribeca relationship with American Express. I went to film school. I started working in TV as an assistant, and then left to make this feature called Timer, which had a really great indie festival run and I went all over the world with it, which was really super fun. But it was hard to sort of get my next gig. I did a lot of writing jobs and revision jobs and was kind of having a hard time making things work. And I wrote a spec called The Shower, that got a lot of attention. It got on the blacklist and it opened a lot of doors for me because it was a horror action comedy with women. So it was kind of a multi-quadrant type of a thing. So I met at Disney and did Olaf and I met at Marvel at the time as well. And I met Rebel and did The Hustle. And so that sort of, all of that kind of happened at the same time. And then I landed squarely in the Marvel offices and have had.
I was going to ask about your blacklist script. Is there still a chance of it being produced?
You never know. I mean, you never know is the short answer to that.
Okay. Well, so obviously you were in Disney, you took meetings with Marvel, which happened first? You writing on Black Widow as story by, I would guess would be before WandaVision started. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so how long were you on Black Widow?
It was almost a year, actually. And it was a really fantastic experience. It was my early experience working, for Marvel and learning how they do things and getting to know the, executives there. And I just learned a lot about, sort of larger filmmaking. Cause I had mostly done, been in the indie space, and then, The Hustle was a very sort of mid-range movie. And then to be kind of vaulted into these huge tentpole movies, that was an education.
And IMDb is showing it as a story by credit. Is that a final credit, or might you still receive screenwriting credit?
That's a final credit.
That's a final credit. Okay. Okay. Well, so then, getting to WandaVision, I absolutely love it. So I'm excited to talk about it with you. When did that start? Was it an idea that you had that you pitched to Marvel, or was it something that they knew that they wanted to get somebody in on?
Yeah, it was not my idea. It was Kevin's idea. It was something that they were thinking about in-house while I was on Black Widow, and I heard about it and was immediately so enamored of the notion of it. And I was invited to pitch and sort of brought a framework to what they were thinking about and some of the ideas that they had. And I just, I really clicked with my producer, Mary Levanos. I feel like I really understood what Kevin's intention was and what his hopes were. And I was lucky enough to win the job.
Obviously we're talking now when only, episode 3 has been seen by the world. And I'm curious what you could tell us about the early ways that it looked, coming from what Kevin told you. Obviously you can't tell us anything beyond episode 3, but just how it even changed once you came on and what your pitch was, because it's really important for writers to learn about pitching. And I'm curious how you took Kevin's idea and pitched it with what you could tell us.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, his idea for it, was a concept and kind of a vibe. And then there were a lot of sort of ideas within that and a lot of imagery within that. Maybe this, maybe that, maybe this. And a lot of the ideas were conflicting, because if you have a million ideas, they don't line up. And so for my pitch, I sort of broke the whole story and for the pitch decided on episode organization. And that, and it was, you know, what the show ended up being in terms of like episode by episode, that shifted, but the larger story stayed the same. And the figuring out what goes where was the task of the writer's room. And that's what we did in there.
Was it always television? Like, were there other elements okay, it was always
television. Yeah, it was always television, yeah.
You know, one of the things that people really have fun with is hearing like a discarded idea, something that was never even shot, not even a deleted scene. And I'm just curious if there was like an early idea that you were rolling around that for, you know, maybe a week you were like, oh yeah, it's definitely going to be a part of the show. And then you guys totally scuttled it.
I love that too. Like when I read, you know, about behind the scenes, everything, that's what I want to hear too. On this one, I think I can't say, because part of what is so delicious about this moment, you know, three episodes in, is that like sky's the limit. Nobody knows where it's going. So,
sure.
So I will decline to talk about the started ideas, but we can chat about it later.
Yeah, we'll chat about it after the first season. Well, yeah. So, you know, obviously you're getting into the concept of a simulacrum, you know, the concept of, at least that's what it seems, you know, people would identify those with markers like Dark City or The Matrix and stuff like that. And you know, by episode three, people have a pretty decent sense of it. But what's fascinating is that on a week-by-week basis so far, you're not delving too far in, which presents a challenge for your audience to stay engaged. So what were some of the things that you knew as a writer you needed to do, since you weren't going to reveal exactly what's going on, as ways to keep people engaged beyond, you know, just our love of the relationship between Wanda and Vision, this other thing that's happening on the corners of the frame?
Yeah, I mean that was the constant conversation. I think that, you know, we had a lot of faith in the audience that if we slowly doled out the scraps, that they would be interested, but that we also were making a promise to deliver, and that we were making a promise to eventually, you know, show the whole peek behind the curtain. You know, we do start picking up the pace, because I believe that, as a viewer, especially, like I want to be rewarded for my close viewership. I want to be rewarded for my attention and my devotion. And I also, I like a ramp up. So, the design was always to start slow, to be deliberate, to be a challenge a bit. Then there are spoils to be had.
Well, your biggest reveal kind of happens at the end of that third episode, where, you know, we're seeing a place outside of the TV realm, right? Much more clearly, or so we think we are. And I would be curious, was it a challenge for you to figure out when exactly and to plan your reveal? I'm not asking you to tell me when the reveal happens, but I could see it being something that was maybe modular, in which I wouldn't be surprised to hear that maybe you were planning on revealing more in episode four, and then you decided, oh, we're going to actually move it to episode six, because it seems like you could slip and slide some of the reveal storytelling elements. Is that something that happened, or would you say that what you planned in the writer's room has pretty much stayed the same once you've been editing when it comes to your reveal?
Yeah, the reveals have stayed the same since the writer's room. That was really, which I hadn't sort of really looked at it that way. And it's fun to think about, because, you know, when I got the job, I was nervous about it because I hadn't run a room before. And so I asked I asked a lot of people for advice. And a lot of the advice was like about sort of finding the show, you know, and that wasn't one of our tasks, because we planted so many things so firmly, so out of the gate.
Right.
So the reveals were really set very early.
You know, one of the other challenges in a situation like this by design is that you are keeping a mystery veiled about your true antagonist. And if you think about it, it's fascinating that you've had 90 minutes of television come so far with, you know, loud bangs and very little else to reveal your, you know, antagonist, other than maybe some fingertips on a keyboard. And I'm curious about the challenge there, because doing you know, especially a superhero movie, not that this is a movie or a TV, you know, a superhero TV show in general, the threat of an antagonist, it would seem would be important, but you've proven just by the fun of the relationship between Wanda and Vision that you could keep it on the side. But how difficult was that for you?
Well, actually, again, these questions are really super great because you're making me see things that I hadn't really sort of looked at in this light. It was easy for me because I think I'm not a natural born superhero storyteller. I love sci-fi, I love action, I love genre, I love all of those things, but I'm always sort of more interested in the internal life and in the sort of big concepts. I mean, you mentioned The Matrix and Dark City. I mean, these are movies I worship, right? And so, like, I'm more interested in the sort of tickling my intellect. So it was really great for me not in the first three episodes to concern myself with an antagonist. I find that writing to be a little bit more challenging. I'm not a natural like comic book reader either. I think because I struggle with antagonists if I'm not given like an enormous window into their psyche.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I forgot to say was obviously the character of Agnes seems like there might be something a little off on her. And, you know, she has things to hide. That's about where we are with her on episode three. But it's funny because, again, with your television format, she is the perfect nosy neighbor, which in a sense of, you know, a TV comedy is the only, you know, antagonist they have other than the situational aspect. Ooh, hey, I'm jumping in really quick to remind you to check out Backstory Magazine. You know, we're so proud. We just published issue 42 of Backstory Magazine. If you love film, if you love television, if you love comic books, you'll love Backstory. We're one of the few magazines in the world that interviews comic book writers in each issue. We obviously have a lot going on that is Marvel related, but I think the thing that you would like the most is that our free issue, which is a great way to test drive us, our free issue happens to be issue 37, which was our Avengers Endgame issue and includes interviews with Marcus and McFeely, the co-writers. Of course, the Russo brothers have their own article, and we went so in-depth and really got behind the scenes on their process and what it took to make Avengers Endgame. So there's so much in there that I just know that you will love. So I really hope you check out Backstory Magazine over at backstory.net. And you could read us on a desktop or laptop or through our iPad app. And if you subscribe, you decide to become a subscriber, you could use coupon code SAVE5. Now, SAVE5 will save you $5 off a one-year subscription, and it'll give you access to anything that we publish that's new, but also our old stuff, too. Our archive you'll get access to currently goes back to about issue 29 or 30, and we're going to be adding new, older issues to it, of course, as we continue to produce new content as well, so we just got to have time for it. But there's so much to explore at Backstory, so I hope you check out our current issue 42 table of contents to see all the amazing stuff we published. We're one of the only magazines in the world that publishes screenplays in their entirety, and we published some really amazing ones in there. You know, comic book fans would know Simon Kinberg, who wrote Mr. and Mrs. Smith, of course, and also X-Men Days of Future Past, based on the classic comic book, and Simon gave us the first screenplay that he ever sold. It's called Ghouls of New York. It's about grave robbers in you know, the 1890s, 1880s. And it's a fantastic script. It was the first script he ever sold. It's never been produced. So we love taking scripts by writers of note that are unproduced that they would still love to see hit theaters. And we put them in there along with a full interview with the writer. And it's in hopes for all of us that the film one day gets made, but you could read it first. We also have Joe Carnahan for his noir saga, LA 58, that he co-wrote with his brother, Matthew Michael Carnahan. And Joe Carnahan is a really talented writer. He even gave us production art that he had drawn up for LA 58. And he's been trying to make that for 10 years. He's actually actively still trying to make it and says he's actually getting really close. So it'll be incredible if he does make it. And I hope he does, but that's an issue 42 as well. Anyhow, there's so much to explore. I want you to get back to our WandaVision interview, but thank you so much for considering becoming a subscriber to Backstory Magazine. So now, without any further ado, let's jump right back into our interview with head writer of WandaVision, Jack Schaefer. Here's the geekiest question I could ask.
Yeah.
Since Wanda is Sokovian, did you plan to have, you know, references from her culture, you know, Sokovian upbringing kind of pop into the show, since we're definitely dealing with her subconscious in a way.
The Sokovian piece is really interesting, because I mean, there was a lot of discussion about her life and who she is and where she comes from. So that certainly informs a lot of, you know, what the show is. It's a really crappy non-answer. I'm sorry.
Okay, no, that's okay. You know, let's talk about something that everyone's seen. The choking sequence in the pilot was just a great moment, because it's a moment that really shows us that something is weird. Something is amiss. And, you know, it's the first moment of crisis that we would really see in the show beyond preparing dinner. And it has a David Lynch feel, you could say, because it's just so weird. Tell us about constructing that unique moment.
It was an idea that I remember really clearly just sort of popping into my head, because what I knew I wanted to do was lull the audience into the sitcom like mode, and then shatter that. And so we had a lot of discussions about like what would be very upsetting to see on a sitcom. We had a lot of conversations about the episodes of sitcoms, the like very special episode, you know, the episode where they dealt with something serious, and how like oogie that always made you feel, like as an audience member, like even as a young child, like when Alex P. Keaton like was on Speed, like I was whatever, I was like six, and I'm like, ooh, there's something, like I don't know what Speed is, but like something doesn't feel right in a really like internal elemental like way. So we had a lot of conversations about like, what's the thing? Like, so we're not going to have like a supervillain crash into the house, because that's not what we're doing. So what's the thing that would be really upsetting? And I was like, what if I remember saying, like, could it be as simple as Mr. Hart choking and not recovering, like not like a little choke and then a little cough and we're fine. Like choking, like what do you do in a sitcom if someone's about to die at the table? And then, you know, it was in the script that the shooting style would shift, that we would move into the set and feel that shift. And then Matt and Jess Hall, the cinematographer who just made the show look so incredibly beautiful, the way that they filmed that moment is so haunting and startling. It's so exciting to see it.
It was a brilliant moment. It was a brilliant moment. How inspired were shows that have mysteries at their center things for you? Like Lost or something like that. I mean, my kids were, you know, still framing it and looking at what was written on the little helicopter, you know, that was in color, and trying to figure out if those numbers meant anything. And obviously we know a show like Lost is big on numbers. Did things like that influence you, or were there other influences for mysteries that you kind of brought forward here?
I worshipped Lost. I loved Lost so much. And I was just like so like slavishly attentive to all of those details. The week to week of it, and I had a friend that I watched it with, and it was like the sacred space that we would watch and like just like not blink and try and catch every little thing. That's a huge influence on me as an artist, and other shows like that, and movies too, that slowly offer the crumbs. The puzzle is just so satisfying. It's so exciting.
You told us that you asked some showrunners for advice about finding your show and how to be a showrunner. Now that you're, you know, pretty much through it, you know, you're getting close to being like done with your season. I don't know how far you guys are in editing, or if it's already completed. What advice would you give to other showrunners the first time around? Something that you learned trialed by fire of running a writer's room from your first experience?
I think that a large reason that our room was was successful was because of the working environment. There was a lot of respect in the room, and a lot of like affection, and it was a very safe space. And I think people flourished in that. I think they were their best creative selves because they felt good in that space. So I think that would be my number one piece of advice for anyone who's lucky enough to run a room is to put as much effort into the climate, the culture in your room as you do to the work.
What was your toughest scene for those first three episodes? Something that was really tough for you to crack? And how did you creatively rise to the challenge?
Yeah, the very first scene of the pilot was really hard. Really, really hard.
Just setting the tone?
Yeah, setting the tone and setting up what the game of the episode was going to be and like having the courage to like believe that people were going to keep watching. So it had to entertain me, and it did. Their back and forth over the stove was, you know, an early like discovery that I wanted them to have like a cutesy back and forth because all those best early couples like had that sort of patter. And so I was like, the challenge was like, what is the thing? What are they talking about? What are they doing? But right. I was like, how do I get that rhythm? And I know that Lizzie and Paul like will make it so irresistible. But yeah, it was writing that like starting page one of the pilot. Oh, terror in my heart.
I mean, it's interesting because one of the things that as a viewer was fascinating to see was point of view, right? You expect that it's really just going to be through Wanda's point of view once we kind of have a general understanding of what's going on. But we do switch to Vision's point of view. And technically within the MCU, he's a character that we know is dead. Does this mean that there could be a second hope for Vision since we're seeing a different point of view? Is that a possibility? I know you can't answer definitively, but is that a suggestion that could be interpreted from a POV switch?
What I will tell you is that Vision has a robust storyline in this show.
Okay.
And that Paul is an extraordinary performer and he's lived with this character in so many incarnations. And he himself is so like dexterous as an actor. So I mean, yeah, there's just there's a lot to see with Vision.
Yes, there is. And we will be able to talk about it more at the end. What's changed the most about your writing habit? If anything's changed during this?
My, like how I write?
Yeah, your well, craft. I mean, obviously TV requires a huge amount of outlining, but your day to day.
Right. Well, so this was my first time writing with other writers. I've always written entirely on my own. And I didn't know, like, it's the most wonderful thing when either you don't have the idea yourself or you don't have the brain space to like come up with the joke or whatever. So the opportunity to like go into a room and say, here's the space for the joke. This is the rhythm that I want. And then they sort of do a joke off and I come back in the room and they have whatever, 20 jokes, that they then perform for me. Like that's like truthfully the only way I want to write now. I mean, I do write on my own, but it's so much better. I never knew that it could be so fun as a team sport.
Does that mean that you would consider writing, you know, features in the future with a partner and that's something that would be important to you?
I don't think that I would. I writing with a partner is different than writing with a room and running a room. So no, I don't think I'd be interested in that. But I am interested in more television and more working with, you know, talented people who inspire me.
That's great. You know, I know we're running out of time. One last question about your habits. You know, when you sit down to write on your own, do you give yourself a certain amount of time to write, or do you give yourself a page count that you're trying to hit each day?
I don't do page count. It's usually by beat, you know, like I want to get to this point in the story. That's usually my process.
And how many days do the writers have to write an episode of WandaVision?
That's a good question. I think they had a week.
A week? Okay.
A week? Yeah.
All right. That makes sense. Well, look, you've been very generous with your time and I absolutely love the show. I can't wait until we could talk about it further as the season goes on. So thanks a lot for your time today. Have a good one.
A pleasure.
I can't wait to see what happens next.
So much fun. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And that's how the Q&A went down. Special thanks again to WandaVision head writer Jack Schaefer for being so generous with her time and coming down and chatting about writing WandaVision. It's such a fun show. I love it so much. I hope we're able to catch up with Jack again later in the season or at the end of the season for a wrap up when there's more stuff that she can talk openly about. But she was really great about talking about stuff from episodes 1 through 3, especially the choking scene, which was just such a fantastically engineered, creepy, weird moment. So thanks again to Jack Schaefer for being so generous with her time. And you know, while you're surfing around online looking for fun things to do, I hope you check out Backstory Magazine over at backstory.net. You can read us on a desktop or laptop, or of course through our iPad app. And having you as a subscriber and getting your support during the pandemic would mean everything for us. And of course, if you're a Marvel fan, it's easy. If you've never read us before, you could test drive us and read our free issue, which just happens to be Avengers Endgame, which is our issue 37. That's our free issue. So inside there, we interviewed Marcus and McFeely, the screenwriters of Endgame. We interviewed the Russo brothers. And these are really in-depth interviews where we really got behind the mechanics of the storytelling. And so it's a great full issue to read. And hopefully that inspires you to become a subscriber. We just published issue 42, our new issue. You could see our table of contents over there at backstory.net. And if you decide you want to subscribe, you could use discount coupon code SAVE5. That'll save you $5 off a subscription to Backstory Magazine, and it'll give you access for a year. Anything new that we publish, it'll also give you access to our archives. You can read old issues. We currently go back to about issue 29 or 30, and we're continually adding older issues when we have time, but we are continuing to publish new content as well. So we just got to have time to upload those old issues, and we have to go article by article, issue by issue, which is just a blast. Look, your support would mean everything to us. So thanks for considering becoming a subscriber to Backstory Magazine. The Q&A with Jeff Goldsmith podcast is a copyright of Unlikely Films Incorporated in 2021. All rights reserved. Of course, if you want to drop me a line, you could easily do so at yogoldsmith@gmail.com. You could also find me as Yo Goldsmith on Twitter or on Instagram. And you could also find me running the account for Backstory Magazine, which is Backstory_mag on Twitter and on Instagram. That's Backstory_mag, M-A-G. And so, yeah, you know, that's the best way to find me. I have a Facebook fan page. I do not go on Facebook enough. I'm busy enough with Twitter and the magazine, the podcast and everything else. I will try and do a little more this year, but I'm going to try and do more Instagram first because there's so much great art that we have generated for Backstory Magazine exclusively that I do want to share with you. And I know that Instagram is a great place to share it more. So you could drop me a line there. I'd love to hear from you. I'm Jeff Goldsmith, the publisher of Backstory Magazine and the host of the Q&A, thanking you for tuning in and telling you to stay out of trouble. Till next week.